This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. Creating your website with Squarespace is simple. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter offer code Guardian to get 10% off your first purchase.
One, two, three, four.
Hey, I'm Jessica Valenti, Guardian columnist, and this is What Would a Feminist Do? All women deep down want kids. Wait until your biological clock kicks in. But it's your job as a woman to have kids. Who will take care of you when you're old? You'll change your mind when you find the right person. Okay, so as you may have guessed, these are not my comments and beliefs, don't worry, but they are real. They're reactions our listeners get when they're asked about why they don't have children. Child-free women shared these and many more with us because, unfortunately, these views are still really common. My question is, why does anyone else care? Why does the public feel like women's bodies and personal decisions, especially the choice to have children, is up for comment and public discussion? It's rude, it's patronizing, and ultimately stigmatizes women and men and their life choices. So maybe you already chose not to have children, maybe you're debating it, but ultimately you're dreading other people's reactions to your decision. Hopefully our episode today can help. I have two experts on living child-free joining me, Megan Dom, author of Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids, and Danielle Henderson, one of those 16 authors, who is also a TV writer for HBO's Divorce and Hulu's Difficult People. She's the creator of Feminist Ryan Gosling and author of the upcoming memoir, The Ugly Cry, about growing up tall, black, and weird in the middle of nowhere.
It's always kind of, you know, joked about, like, oh, ha-ha, I could have shoes or whatever. But realistically, you could have a 401k. You could have, like, a retirement plan. You could have...
And also, you can plan your life in a way that makes you a productive member of society.
But first, a short rant. There are so many ridiculous stereotypes about women who choose not to have children, but I think that the one that irritates me the most is this idea that not having kids is a selfish choice. It's as if women owe the world children, as if that was our sole purpose, and that somehow by not fulfilling it, we're doing the world this great disservice. And of course, this ties in to the idea that motherhood and womanhood at its core is about sacrificing and not living for yourself and doing for other people, which, of course, is wonderful. And that's great if that's your choice, but it doesn't have to be. And naturally, this is not a criticism that's really directed at men who don't want to have kids, just women. There seems to be something about a woman living a life that she chooses and not one that society picks for her that annoys us or that we find completely unacceptable. There's nothing selfish about choosing the life that you want for yourself. As I would say to my daughter when she is getting up in someone's business, worry about yourself. And now to discuss all this, I have two guests joining me, Megan Dom, author of Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids, and Danielle Henderson, one of those 16 authors, who is also a TV writer for HBO's Divorced and Hulu's Difficult People, creator of Feminist Ryan Gosling, and author of the upcoming memoir, which I'm really excited to read, The Ugly Cry, about growing up tall, black, and weird in the middle of nowhere. Thanks, you two, for being here. I'm really excited to have you on.
Thank you.
So, Megan, why don't we start with you? What made you want to write about this and to put together an anthology and an essay format?
Well, this whole subject of deciding not to have children, I think, has been handled in a way that, for me at least, has been very frustrating over the years. And for so long, I had wanted to do a project like this where I assembled people, professional writers, to think thoughtfully and honestly and respectfully about the subject, because I felt like it was often approached in this really kind of binary, sort of dismissive breeders versus non-breeders kind of way. And I found it really offensive and mostly just not helpful and not useful. And so I wanted to kind of look at the subject in a more nuanced way.
And Danielle is one of the authors. And how did that come about? How did you guys connect? And
well, as you can imagine, the process of approaching people about the
right.
subject, it was very, I wrote a lot of very ginger emails,
yeah,
you know,
the email
like,
was great.
You know, it became this kind of parlor game, like, you know, let's think about writers that I admire, and okay, do they have children? And if they don't,
right.
why? And, you know, you want to be really careful about that. So, yeah, Danielle was somebody, I knew her work, I had heard her do some podcast interviews and just thought she was delightful. And I knew
you.
About the, of course, I knew about the Ryan Gosling connection
right.
and thought I could get to him through her.
And my desire to not have children with him.
That's right. Right. And that is really putting your foot down. Yeah. So
that's a big thing. So were you excited to write about
yeah.
the topic?
Yeah. Oh, I was so excited. And I really appreciated Megan's bravery for wanting to broach the subject in this way, because I think that it shouldn't feel brave in this day
yeah.
and age. But she's absolutely right that it's definitely talked about. The decision to not have children is talked about in such a binary way. And it never felt organic to what my experience was. I knew as a very young child that I never wanted to have kids.
Right.
And I remember having, it's in the book, it's in the story. I remember having that conversation with my grandmother on a walk to school. I was 7 years old and I just said, I'm never going to college because it's like jail. And I'm never having kids because kids are terrible. And she just started cracking up and she's like, oh, you'll change your mind. But I knew in my mm-hmm. heart at that moment that I didn't want children, and then life proved me to be completely
yeah. Well, you're
right.
One for two,
right?
So you mentioned your grandmother saying, "Oh, you'll change your mind," and I'm wondering if both of you can talk a little bit about some of the other like reactions that women tend to get when they talk about being child free by choice.
I got "you'll change your mind" a lot. I got "well, you know, you'd be a better parent than your parents," so it's kind of selfish to not have kids for that reason because you're so good with kids. And I am. I'm not like some kind of weird monster lady out there scaring kids, you know, out of my life. I do have children in my life, but I don't want to raise them. I think it's a totally different thing to raise and care for a child. And you have to want to make that decision. I think the better parents make it a decision when they can. But yeah, I definitely got the selfish thing.
It's so interesting because, I mean, this idea that thinking hard about this choice and really making a decision based on what you know your strengths are, what kind of person you want to be in the world, what is best for children and society, the fact that that gets kind of framed as a selfish set of questions or line of inquiry is just amazing to me. It's
right?
It's so counterintuitive, and yet it is so common. And I actually think that part of that is the fault of some people who have made this choice and instead of sort of being honest about it are saying things like, well, I'd rather have a boat. I'd rather
Do
have
people say that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I hear it all the time. There's this kind of glib.
I'm like,
I have a kid, but a boat is nice. Right, but there is this kind of glib discourse that arises around this where, you know, people will say, you know, it's easier for some people to just say, well, oh, I forgot to have kids.
Right.
Or my kid has four legs and drinks out of a bowl on the floor. Ha ha ha. And you know, I understand that it's hard to talk about sometimes depending on the situation, but I really, for me personally, I would love to get to a point where it's just not a big deal at all to say, no, I don't want to have kids, the same way like some people don't want to have a pet or
right.
own a house or a car. Like it's you could go one way or the other. And for some reason, this is just really hard for people to get their minds around still.
But it also strikes me as so strange that it's the default expectation rather than a proactive decision. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like to me, like it was always really framed as like, well, of course, rather than you're gonna make this decision, which I think that you need to because it is so hard and
right.
because it changes your life so, dramatically. it can't just be something that you're like, well, okay, that's the next step. Like, get
but
married.
But most people do want to have children. I mean, that's something that I've had to kind of come around to admitting. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. it is always going to be the default setting.
It seems like this default status of people wanting to have kids is it's an extension of it seems to be an extension of like this competition that's created between women that's a result of some kind of weird misogyny. Like it's almost a way to further police women's bodies and lives.
Yes.
Because honestly, like having children is the main reason women are in poverty. Like it's statistically proven. And, you know, that is married women, single women, like women suffer financially and they suffer in terms of the scope of their lives when mm-hmm. they have children. So it really is interesting to me that it is the default because I don't think people take that into consideration. And it's always kind of, you know, joked about like, oh, ha ha, I could have shoes or whatever. But realistically, you could have a 401k. You could have like a retirement plan. You could have.
And also you can plan your life in a way that makes you a productive member of society.
Yes.
And it's not just this sort of, well, I can plan my life so I can do whatever I want. I mean, there
right.
is that. Nobody can do whatever they want, by the
right.
way, you know, but it, I just, this idea of sort of thinking about how best you can contribute to your community
mm-hmm.
and the people around you and the children around you and everyone around you, that to me is pretty unassailable. And so I don't really understand why that still gets kind of interpreted as some kind of sociopathic
right.
Well, part of the
problem is that we think that the only way for a woman to be a productive member of society is to reproduce, right?
Right.
And to
right.
be a
quite
caretaker.
Literally. Yes.
yes. Completely literally is to have right. children, take care of those children. It's the most important job
right.
in the world. Most important
yes.
thing you'll ever do. Best thing, you know.
When the actresses win best actress, they say, "Oh, but my most what was it? Natalie
exactly.
Portman, would you say my most important role is
Blah.
Being a mom?"
I got, you know,
yeah.
I don't like that. And I have written about this and I got a lot of criticism for it when I wrote about having a daughter. And I said, I don't think that's the most important thing I'm ever going to do. I think I have a lot to contribute. It's probably my most important relationship, right?
Right? Right.
Like it's a wonderful relationship in my life, but it is not my job. It's not my call. Like
she'll benefit from seeing that
I hope
in
so.
Your life.
That's a great gift that you're giving her, actually, to showing
I hope so, yeah.
showing that her mom has a life, and we have not all been the beneficiaries of such gifts.
Right,
right,
right. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about advice giving. You know, how can women handle sort of invasive questions, prying questions? Maybe
yeah,
what
go,
advice
I go
would
for
you
the
give?
Pepper spray right away.
Excellent.
And ask questions later.
Yeah.
Just spray them in the face. I feel like it's really best to be direct with people. And if someone is, especially someone you don't know very well, if they're bold enough to ask you why you don't have kids or to challenge you in a way and say it's selfish not to have kids, I just flip the question back around, you know, and just kind of say, well, why did you choose to have kids? What was your thought process in it? And what do you think it where do you think it differs, or what do you contribute that's different to what I'm contributing to our culture by having kids? And they usually can't answer that.
Right.
Because it's kind of like, again, it's a default, it's a
right.
foregone conclusion. And I say, well, the same way that it was a foregone conclusion for you that you would have kids, that's how I feel about not having them.
I usually say something like, you know, no, I don't. And, you know, just wasn't for me. And you know, I have a, you know, personally, I have a problem with, like, I don't like people feeling sorry for me. It's almost like a
right.
just a thing I need to get over. But I'm always on the alert for people feeling sorry for me and making sure they don't feel sorry for me. So I also have to worry about being sort of overcompensating and, you know, making
right.
too big a deal out of it. Like sometimes they don't really care that much when
right.
they don't have kids.
You've already lit something on yeah. fire and they're like, it wasn't that
Let
deep.
Me give you my list. I actually have in my pocket my entire treatise.
Laminated.
Here.
Right. Yeah.
But I think part of the problem with asking those invasive questions is that you literally never know what somebody's medical background
yeah.
is. What if they cannot have children and they really want children?
Yeah.
And then they have to explain to you this entire traumatic, you know, event of why they can't have kids. And it's not because they don't want them. It's because they can't. So I think it's, you have to be careful.
And that's a very different conversation. And that's something that I've said with this book. I think whenever we talk about this book, I always make a point of saying, like, it's a huge privilege to even be having this conversation.
Sure.
Like, not only because we're in a moment in history where we can have it, but we're also people who are not heartbroken over this. But I mean, you know, one of the other things that I really try to emphasize is that, you know, it's possible to feel good about your decision, but also have moments where you feel a little wistful. It's possible to hold two feelings or thoughts at the same time.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. Whether the story behind your passion is out of the ordinary or simply out of this world, you should tell it in an unforgettable way. Squarespace helps you do just that, with the only websites designed to showcase what makes your passion worth pursuing. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
Today we're talking about the stigmas that child-free women face. How can those of us who choose not to have children deal with inappropriate questions and comments? We got a call from a listener in Seattle who said,
"Hi, this is Tanya in Seattle, and I feel like many women sort of feel the pressure or need to have children and that society is not going to understand if they don't. And I didn't decide to have children. I'm 42 and I never wanted any of my own. I work with a lot of younger women now in their late 20s and early 30s. And we have this discussion a lot about the decision to have kids or not to. And one of the things that's been really striking to me is that in talking with these women, it's been astonishing how validating it has seemed for them to be able to have a discussion with an older woman who's made this decision. So thanks. Take care. Bye.
Do you think that that's shifting at all? And the fact that there are women and men talking about being child-free, are there more models for people who make this decision?
Yeah, I think there are more models.
Even anecdotally speaking, you just see far more women making this choice. And I mean, and sometimes I even think it's harder for men to talk about it because, you know, what happens, you know, there's the stereotype of the selfish woman.
Right.
She's obsessed with her career. That's why she doesn't want to have kids. On the other hand, if a man doesn't want to have kids, oh, he's a playboy. He's a Peter Pan syndrome. He won't grow up. And it's interesting because it's like the woman who doesn't want to have kids is almost sort of too grown up.
Right.
And the man who doesn't want it is completely adolescent.
That's interesting.
So, yeah. And I think that's something that needs to be explored more.
Danielle, you started to talk about this as like a feminist issue. And I'm wondering for both of you, like, how can we incorporate it more into feminist conversations, into reproductive justice conversations, right? Because it is such a big deal, but it doesn't really, it doesn't feel like it's talked about as a political issue, but more as a cultural one, right?
Right. And I think it's part of, for me, it's all wrapped up in this conversation about birth control. I think that's a great place to start. You know, if you I remember being told when I was younger that, you know, well, birth control is not just about not having babies. It's about, you know, your period. And I'm like, it's also okay if I just don't want to have babies. Like, let's start talking to women about the reality of using birth control over their lifetime and what that means for them as a way to just have sex and have fun. You know, it doesn't always have to be this intense conversation about it. It could be an entry point to a more political framing of something that I think is culturally considered taboo. We're seeing women really take a stance and saying, young women especially, you know, they're talking about rape culture. They're talking about things that have been taken for granted for most of their lives that they want to change. So it's a lot of reclamation, I guess, that kind of what I'm seeing as young women deciding not to have kids seems like they're reclaiming some space that that's regarding the rest of their body and bodily decisions.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I also think that so much of the policy conversation around women is not only has to do with reproductive health, but also has to do with parenting issues, you know, being a mother in the workplace, the quote-unquote juggling act. You know, I think it's really interesting how, you know, the job of parenthood, motherhood especially, has been ratcheted up. I mean, we always talk about how in the 70s, you know, the kids all went and played on the street. And then in the 80s, suddenly there was hysteria. There was all sorts of, you know, whether it was the panic over satanic cults.
The fake daycare.
Daycares or kidnapping. I mean, the kids on the milk carton and the Eitan Peitz case. And I don't think it's any accident that that sort of panic coincided with women going into the workplace.
Right.
And suddenly you had, you know, these women who were finding daycare arrangements or, you know, not being at home all the time. And the culture said, hey, wait a second.
Right.
Actually, your kid is in peril and you can't do this. And so what's happened is we kind of fetishized, you know, the working mom, the juggling act, you know, the woman in the power suit holding the baby.
Right.
And, you know, where the every, you know, Atlantic magazine cover story for a couple of years was
the baby in the briefcase.
Was obsessed with
the
baby in the briefcase.
That poor baby.
So I know.
It's like, can I just get a crib?
The baby's like, there's all this gum and disgusting wadded up lipstick all over. Yeah, gross. This lifesavers.
A pair of sneakers in here. Jesus spirit.
But there's really a kind of almost. We've almost romanticized the chaos of being a working parent and especially a working mom. And so for me, I think that I'd love to see something where we say, hey, actually, if you're a person that doesn't have that much to do over the course of your day, maybe that's not so bad. Or, you know, it's about that. This is why this book has been so fascinating, because it's not only about women, it's about people. It's about what kind of person you want to be in the world. And this idea of choosing what kind of life you want to have is actually quite radical. And it seems really simple and obvious, but it's not.
And
to
I think,
a lot of people.
Yeah, I think in young women are kind of seeing that too, like that they can choose the life they want to have and that children don't have to be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I love about the book and what I love about so many people who are writing in the book is that they're approaching this subject from so many different angles, but it always feels like they're getting to this greater idea of what it is to be a person in society. And at one of the reading events that happened in New York, somebody made the comment about how everyone in the book talks about how they like kids. Like, it almost feels like we have to always add that caveat. Like, well, we're not eating babies in our free time. We love kids. We just don't want to have them. And I would like to get us to a point where we don't even have to say that. Where it could just be, I don't want kids, agree.
I actually think that's a very legitimate criticism of the book. And my answer to that is, you know, I would love to see a time where we don't have to sort of, you know, make the point to everyone, just so you know, I don't hate kids. But frankly, we weren't there a year ago when the book came out. And I think part of the reason the book had mainstream success, all kinds of readers, parents, it was on the bestseller list in the parenting and childcare category. And I think part of the reason for that is that I was pretty conscientious about making that point, not hitting it or people over the heads with it, but making sure it was there. But yes, I would hope that 5-10 years from now, that point would not need to be made.
Absolutely. So getting back to this like work life question, a lot of listeners wrote in saying that they wouldn't have a child, particularly because of how terrible the U.S. system is around treating pregnant women and mothers and lack of maternity leave and everything like that. But a couple of listeners actually wrote in to say that they felt discriminated against at work for not having kids, right? That they didn't have the same sort of opportunity for like flexible work hours and arrangements that maybe that parents are given. And I'm just wondering if you all think that this is common and can speak to like what work-life balance might look like when you don't have children and why we don't talk about that.
Right. Well, yeah, because the assumption is that if you don't have kids, you're just hanging out in your underwear in your free time,
right,
you know, swinging from chandeliers. And that you're not actually working very hard, because what are you working for? You have nothing to work for, right?
That's right. You have like, absolutely no incentive.
No incentive whatsoever. I think I'm kind of a very forward person when it comes to stuff like that. And when I see that kind of inequality in a workplace, I'm going to say something about it. And I know that a lot of people don't feel comfortable with it. It doesn't necessarily denigrate or take away from the parent's experience for you to say to a boss, I also need some time off, or I would also love to work from home 2 days a week. You don't have to know why.
Right. It's not a zero sum game. That's the thing. Why is saying, you know, I need time to do something even though I don't have kids, why is that threatening to a parent? I mean, the fact is, as you know more than anyone, Danielle, people have, you know, parents to take care of. I know you take care of your grandmother quite intensely.
Exactly.
And even statistically, people who don't have children do far more volunteer work in the community. They are more likely to be the ones taking care of aging parents, relatives, that sort of thing. And again, this goes back to, you know, isn't it better for all of us, including children, to live in a community where people are doing what they want to do and their skill sets are matching what they're actually trying to do? So I just think that we need it's all of a piece. You know, we need to evolve to the point where, you know, some enlightened boss is going to look at the big picture rather than say, well, you know, you don't have any soccer games to go to. So, you know.
Yeah, like let's push for that equality all around, because I think that it's not necessarily a case of you don't want to get to a point, I would hope, as a boss where you're preferencing people with children as a way to kind of keep the morale high and keep spirits going for them and forgetting the fact that other people have things in their life that are important as well. And yeah, I think I would really push hard for that equality at work. And it sucks that it has to come from the employees up. But I think that a lot of employers are clueless about this because they do what they have to do to the letter of the law.
Right.
So it's again, it goes back to this bigger picture of policy change and considering parenthood in the scope of a person's life and not as the end of a person's life. Like, we have to start making all these concessions for them because they're not doing anything else anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we get to a point with our policies and with our government where we can really start to see the value of women's lives, regardless of whether they have children or not, I think those things will start to change for employers. But right now they're doing what they have to do because of what they're forced to do by law.
Right. So just to wrap up, for any women or men out there sort of making the decision not to have children but concerned about dealing with that stigma, what advice would you have for them? Any general?
Well, read the book, Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 writers.
Definitely.
On the decision not to have kids. and then what advice? I don't know.
That's a hard
just
one.
Try. I mean, everyone is different. You know, I think maybe the best advice is just to kind of like think about the nature of advice. I think that when parents encourage people to have kids, it's not they're doing it because they're judging you for not having kids. I just think it's human nature to want people to do what we do. It's like if you buy a house, you want your friend to buy a house. If you, you know, discovered a new route to work, you want to tell people about it. So I think maybe a good place to start is just kind of think about where some of these pressures are coming from.
I think it's easy to start where you live, you know, just kind of maybe try to broach that subject when it comes up as confidently as you can with the people that you know and love, who will always find a way to talk to you about it, whether you like it or not. But also don't feel like you have to talk about it at all. You know, I think that could be a good way to go. That, like, let's start to change the conversation. Don't feel like it's your lot in life to now sway people to your side when it comes to deciding not to have a kid. Maybe just decide not to have one and see how it goes. And if people confront you, we've given you lots of advice on how to shoot that down. But I do think it's okay to not talk about it.
Yes.
And it's okay to
Nobody
not...
has to be the spokesperson for whatever they do or
no.
don't.
And you don't have to be the
represent.
Martyr for this. And you don't have to. And you can say that, you know, you can say, I don't want to have children. I don't want to talk about it further.
I love it. Megan and Danielle, thank you so much for joining
thank
me.
Thank you for having
thank
us.
Thank you. It's fun.
Megan Dom, author of Selfish, Shallow, and Self-Absorbed, 16 Writers on the Decision Not to Have Kids, and Daniel Henderson, one of those 16 authors who is also a TV writer, both for HBO's Divorce and Hulu's Difficult People. She's the creator of Feminist Ryan Gosling and author of the upcoming memoir, The Ugly Cry. That's it for this week. What Would a Feminist Do? Is produced by Maggie Freeling. Katie Enders is the supervising producer. Valerie Lipinski is the head of multimedia. Our new intro song was made for us by Rook Day. If you like this podcast, please take a minute to rate us and leave a review on iTunes. It will help get the word out to others that What Would a Feminist Do is something that they should be listening to. I really, really appreciate it. I'm Jessica Valenti for The Guardian. I hope you'll join me again in 2 weeks for What Would a Feminist Do?